Welcome to another edition of We Need to Talk About Movies, brought to you by BanterFlix.com. And now, here's your host, Jim McClain.
Hello, hello, hello. Yes, I am indeed your host, Jim McClain. Welcome to another episode of We Need to Talk About Movies, a movie review podcast brought to you by the BanterFlix movie review website, Cinematic Discussion with a Northern Irish Accent. We're back. We've been away for a little while. I do apologise. We were a little busy with the Dark Hedges International Film Festival, but that's now over and done with, and we're back. So we're kicking off with the podcast we recorded a little while ago. It's part of our We Need to Talk About Disney series, our deep dive into the dark ages of Disney's animated back catalogue. This has been curated by BanterFlix's resident Disney queen, Victoria Brown. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about The Fox and the Hound. And yeah, it's a lot of fun on this recording. I'm joined by Victoria, obviously, because this is her series. This is something that she's been really passionate to do. And making her podcast debut is local cosplayer Sarah McDowell. And yeah, we're trying some new voices on the pod. And we've worked with Sarah in the past. We've done a couple of photo shoots with Sarah. So yeah, we thought we'd get her in. And yeah, I think it all went great. Once again, this episode is recorded via Zoom. Hopefully that doesn't affect your enjoyment of the pod. So I'm going to stop rambling. Thank you once again for tuning in. If this is your first time listening to the pod, then welcome to the madness. If you've been listening to us for a while, then thank you for continuing to tune in, and hopefully you're enjoying the show as much as you did upon your first listen when you first discovered our little cinematic rambliness. And yeah, so I'm going to shut up now. Let's play a clip of The Fox and the Hound and then get stuck into this week's episode.
Okay, Boomer, now you know what to do.
Yeah, leave it to me, leave it to me.
I was sure I heard someone knocking. Oh, dear! My laundry! Oh, here! Stop it! Oh, you pesky bird! Will you come back here? Oh, stop! Well, I wonder what got into those birds. Well, bless my soul. Wait. It's a baby fox. Oh, hello, little fella. I wonder where its mother is. Come on now. I'm not going to harm you. No, no. Oh, isn't that... Oh, my, my, you're a feisty little rascal, aren't you? There, there. Now, calm down. No, I just can't leave you out here all alone.
So, that's a clip of The Fox and the Hound. Victoria, this is our sixth... it's the seventh episode, but this is the sixth movie in the series. Because I always get confuddled because Victoria did a rather fab... little introduction episode to this, and that's when I'm doing my count. That's how I always get caught up. So this is the sixth movie in Disney's dark era that we're looking back at. Do you want to set the scene for our listeners? Give us a taste of what The Fox and the Hound is all about.
So The Fox and the Hound is a really wholesome yet quite sad story of the friendship between a little fox named Todd and a hunting dog named Copper.
This is the question. As our resident Disney queen, we will come to you first. So where does this rank for you in your love of all things House of Mouse related?
I'm not going to lie. It's not particularly high. I'd actually forgotten that I had seen it the whole way through until I was on the phone to my mum last night telling her that I was going to be recording this with yous. And I'd said, "Dear, I don't remember watching it, blah, blah, blah." And she was like, "What are you talking about? You watched it all the time." And I was like, "No, I didn't." And we sat and argued for about 20 minutes. And then when I actually sat down to watch the film, I was like, "Oh yeah, I remember all of this."
While you were talking to your mum, did she sing?
Yes, actually. This is a running joke in our Disney pod because my mum used to like sweep around the house like Snow White when she was cleaning and she would sing. So it's just a running joke in our series.
I think Victoria, on the last episode in the dark area, I think we need to get your mum on to the pod to discuss, and even just to finish up the pod, just to sing us a little bit of Disney. I think this needs to happen. So I'm just going to call your mum Mrs. Brown. So not
she
Mrs.
hate that.
not Mrs. Brown. So it's not Mrs. Brown's boys, but Mrs. Brown. I'm sure you're listening to this because you like to keep abreast of what Victoria is up to and kind of the nonsense that she has to endure and the nonsense that she encourages here at Banterflix. I think you should get in touch with us. And even if it's a little surprise for Victoria, I think we could arrange on the last... What will be the last film within our dark era?
Oliver and Company.
Okay, so we know from a previous podcast that Victoria has cried at that film. So we know that. So I think if you're listening, Mrs. Brown, and I hope you are, that maybe we could arrange somehow a little surprise appearance by Victoria. But anyway, that's going off on a little tangent. So like you, I didn't remember watching this, but I knew within about 20 minutes of watching it that I had seen this before, and I think it's kind of because everybody just knows that line, "I'm a hound dog," roo, 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 that type of stuff. That was my memory of The Fox and the Hound. I didn't remember it being, and apparently this is a thing, one of the most depressing Disney movies of all time. I didn't remember that it's quite as somber. And I will come back because this is the first one, particularly in this retrospective, Victoria, I've really struggled with, in the sense that it's the first of those Disney films we've looked back at that I've had to watch over two sittings. Because I will caveat that point later on in kind of how I think it's very much a film of two halves for me, but that's, people aren't here to listen to me ramble on about all my kind of thoughts. Sarah, as the newbie, you know, I mean, this is the kind of point where we kind of ask, I mean, how much of a Disney fan are you? Put your Disney credentials on show, madam.
I mean, I love Disney. One of my things that I do sort of like, you know, as a nice relax thing is I love watching Disneyland vlogs. So I'm that sort of like, you know, Disney nerd about particular movies. And, you know, most of them are newer movies. But again, I put on Fox and the Hound and I was like, I don't really remember this movie. 5 minutes in, I was like, I remember everything about this movie.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing then for all of us here, that I was aware I'd watched it. I knew I watched it because my mother would have religiously bought me the Disney VHS, all of them, when they were being kind of re-released, she bought them and we watched them. And I suppose for the fact that my dad to an extent was kind of into gun sports and field sports, there was that little kind of connection in there. My dad is not as mental as the as what is displayed on here, but I really struggled with this. And even from the opening credits, because we think back, and I know it's been a while for various reasons, Victoria, since we last recorded. I think it was April, or maybe it might have been March, actually, when we last recorded a Disney retrospective pod. And we look back to the opening sequences in, you know, the Aristocats. That's a joke, Sarah, don't worry about it. The Aristocats, we think even with Robin Hood, and the opening with, I mean, I love and adore the opening sequence, or the opening title sequence for The Rescuers, just that little bottle. And I'd always remembered it as being animated, but it's just still images of this little bottle traveling the sea. And this is, in comparison, this is quite dull opening sequence, opening titles. It's just the forest, and it's again, it's the same idea. It's the still images, and the stills are moving across, and then we get straight into people talk, as I mentioned, about this being one of the most depressing Disney movies. Right from the opening 5 minutes, you know, Bambi at least had 20 minutes, half an hour. You know, I don't know how long into The Lion King, that Mufasa bit the dust. But, you know, very early on, we see a fox. Well, we don't see, but we're made abundantly clear that Todd's mum has come to not the best of endings. We'll kind of be honest, but she's not going to be seeing the closing credits, is what we're saying, right? And I find, that was fine. I find the first 20 minutes, particularly when it's the younger characters, because I know Corey Feldman, I think, is voicing the young Copper. I don't know who's voicing the young Todd, but the kind of early on sequence when they're very young, I just find really run-of-the-mill Disney, not really knowing what to do. There's no real kind of, there's nothing really I could dig my teeth into. And I mean, I said to my lovely wife, it was about 9:30, we started to watch this last night, and at about the 40-minute mark, I was like, you know what? I think I'll watch the rest of this tomorrow. And I haven't done that with any of the Disney films we've watched. I don't know. For either of you, come back to yourself, Victoria, you'd mentioned you'd forgotten this, but you clearly, from talking to your mum, you clearly loved this film when you were younger. I mean, do you, although it's maybe not high up now, did you struggle in the early parts of this?
Yes, actually, like you said, with the opening credits, like, I had actually had to check my TV because I thought I'd accidentally muted it, because there's no music. There's no noise until like nearly all the credits are done. And like, yes, visually it is very pretty, like it's kind of reminiscent of Bambi in that way, but it was a very dull way to open the film. And it's just, and like you said, Jim, like, I actually turned it off, I think it was after Amos takes the two dogs on the hunting trip. I paused it for about half an hour while I went and did some other stuff, because it does kind of perfectly split into two, because the first half of them is pups, because they're kids, pups, and then as adults. But I don't know, the film is just, there's no real sense of urgency. It just kind of plods along, and yes, it's cute and it's fun, but it's, apparently I loved it as a kid, but as an adult, I'm just like, eh, I don't know. Yep. Like, I love the message behind it, like the idea of friendship can go deeper than who you're meant to be friends with, like, because Copper and Todd are friends before they are taught that they're meant to hate each other. Like, I like that message, but I don't know, it doesn't feel very, I don't know, I was just very like deflated watching.
Yeah, I thought it might have just been me, but I thought it was all kind of one note. It was just sort of like, even the bit when they're kids, I paused the TV and I was like, this is 40 minutes into the movie?
Yes.
And they're still kids? I'm like, oh, okay. The one thing that I remembered was there was a trap and there was a bear. And apart from that, it was all just sort of, okay, well, we're working up to the bear. We're here, we're still going, and we haven't got to it yet. Oh, 5 minutes from the end, great.
Yep.
You know, yeah, I thought that was maybe just me, but no, good to know other people feel that way about it as well. I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but
no, it's not bad. It's just, like you said, it's very one note.
Yeah.
It just, to me, felt, I think you put it lovely, actually, Sarah. It felt very one note. It felt very much like just Disney in middle gear, coasting along, just doing a Disney, some cute animals, doing some cute animal stuff. And then it kind of, because I started watching it again this morning, and it feels like, it feels like very much like a film of two halves. It feels like I wanted more of the second half, when we see Todd, who's now voiced by Mickey Rooney, and I didn't reckon Mickey Rooney. Yeah. I think Mickey Rooney is just one of those voices that you know, but I couldn't place it until I actually went on to IMDb, and he's been abandoned. He's in an animal reserve, I think, or something along that lines, or a game reserve. And we see, is it Vixie, I think he meets?
Vixie. Vixie.
And that is when I thought the film kind of went into gear. And then we have this sequence with the bear that is terrifying. I think if you were, because this is the thing, we've talked about this, Victoria, in all the pods so far, where we talk about this being a great, this era of Disney being great gateway drugs into the House of Mouse, because we have the Aristocats, we have Robin Hood, there's the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, we have the Rescuers, that are largely quite gentle. And this is a film that's really gentle up until a great big fucking scary bear just kind of comes across, and we have blood. I can't think of another.
Sure do.
Yeah.
I can't think of another Disney film. Again, you know, you're both clearly more, you know, more clued up on Disney, but I can't think of a Disney, because I made notes when I was watching it, going, I don't remember a Disney film, because I'm trying to think with Bambi, I don't think you ever see the gun. Do you see the gun? Because I don't think you see the hunter. You hear?
You hear like the leitmotif of the da-na-na, and then if you've got the animals like scurrying about and scared, I think that's the most, I don't even think you see a shadow.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware.
Because unless you see a gun, there's a gun being fired, there's hides of animals, which is kind of not problematic, but that's
it's a bit of a departure from the last couple of films.
Yeah, it feels like a bit of a departure. And like, I am the person, I've probably mentioned this before, but I remember many years ago watching, and I do mean this genuinely, listeners, not like last week or maybe 2-3 years ago. I was a lot younger at this point, when in an episode of Lassie, there was a hunter grabbed a gun. Similar kind of vein, because we have Amos is obsessed with killing this fox. And I don't really think the bear is the villain. The bear's not really a villain in this. The bear's just basically doing bear stuff. That's what bears do. Amos is very much the villain in this film, although weirdly by the end there's a bit of relationship, bit of kind of potential for some love for between them. I can't remember what's the name of the old woman.
Widow Tweed. It's either Tweed or Tweedy.
Widow Tweed, yeah. That's the one. There's a bit of a hint of a relationship going on there. But he's very much a villain. And I remember like the sequence where he's going off and he's going, I'm going to kill this fox. Mon, let's go, copper. And I remember like on a tangent kind of something similar happening in an episode of Lassie. And I just broke down in tears as a young child. And neither of you have been to my house. None of the listeners, maybe some of them. Maybe my mum listens. Mrs. Brown, you haven't been to the house yet. But in my house, you have to kind of go round. Well, I have to record, Victoria. We'll have to record your mum's singing performance for you as a surprise. But walking round our house, you have to go walk round from the back room into the dining room, and there's a hallway into the kitchen. And my mum talks about this going, it was as if I'd kind of maybe fallen or something, because she just heard this noise of this wailing child walking round the house. And I came around and was like, what's wrong? She's like, they're going to kill Lassie. They're going to kill Lassie. And my mum had to come. My mum had to come back round with me and watch it with me and kind of say, because that's what you have to do as a parent. I'm not a parent yet. But that's what a parent has to do. It's like, it's okay. It's all going to be okay. And giving you that hug and say, look, there you go, Lassie's okay. He didn't kill her. He loves her in the end. And I don't know. Maybe I'm putting too much of those memories into this. I could imagine that being quite scary. Where this film starts is not really where I expect it to not so much end, because it ends quite sweetly in the sense that whilst they may, well, it ends quite sweetly, and then you've got the weird thing with the Fox and the Hound 2 in 2006, which kind of goes back to when they were kids, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But it ends the fact that they might not be friends and hanging about with each other, but they're still friends. They're friends again. You know, it's kind of that somber but yet quite sweet note. But I think if you were a parent and said, great kids, there's a sweet little cartoon with a wee fox playing with a wee hound. I don't know. I mean, maybe I've said this before, kids are tough these days, but I don't know. Feel free to jump in, Sarah or Victoria. Well, I don't know where this film goes to. I'm not saying it's like a tough 18 film or anything like that, but I think compared to some of the other Disney films, particularly we've talked about so far in this dark era, I think it's probably, I think, the one I would say, yeah, give it a watch before you let your kids sit down and watch this, because you'll know your child better than anybody else. You'll know your child better than any censor, anyone from the BBFC, to know whether, you know, this is too tough for them or not. Because I, even now, I think that bear, I'm 40 next year, and that bear still scared me.
The other really interesting thing is that the version of the movie that they put out is actually the gentler version, because Chief, the other, the older dog, was actually meant to die. He's, you know, and they were like, that might be a bit much, but have this bear. But yeah, the bear was like the one thing that I remembered. I was like, I don't remember a lot about this movie, but I remember the bear being terrifying. And I think it's also, it's thrown in very quickly near the end. So you don't really have like a, okay, well, we dealt with the bear, so we go home.
Yeah, even the resolution after the bear, like, it's very like, story, 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 bear, and then you go home. And you're like, what just happened?
And credits.
Yeah.
Well, it's not even credits, it's just the end. The end.
Yeah. I think the bit about Chief's interesting, because when I was doing a bit of research before the pod, I found out that, because the whole point of this series is to look at the films in between the death of Walt Disney and the start of the Disney Renaissance, which kind of like reinvigorated life into Disney. Like, that's when people our age think of Disney, that's usually what we think of.
Yeah.
So this film, especially because it's about halfway through this kind of dark age, this was when the last of the nine old men worked on the film, when they were the ones, they were like the original animators who worked in Snow White, Pinocchio, like the golden age Disney. So this film was a combination of them and new animators that were coming through the Disney training program. So the likes of Tim Burton and other ones that I can't remember and I feel bad.
Brad Bird is there. Brad Bird, John Lasseter is there.
Yeah. Apparently, during the production, there was a lot of conflict between them, because the new animators, like you said, Sarah, they wanted to stick to the source material and kill Chief off. And then the older ones were like, no, that's too dark. Because even when he gets hit by the train and he's injured, like, I was still like, oh my God, that was so scary. And that was the gentler version.
Yeah.
Like, but I think this film marks that interesting like transition like into the darker stuff, because the next film that we're covering is The Black Cauldron, which is obviously very, very dark. So it goes from like The Aristocats, Winnie the Pooh, Robin Hood, this, and then The Black Cauldron. Like, it's such a jump. I feel like this is a very in-betweeny bit, because there's some really cute bits with Copper and Todd when they're kids, and then there are the really random dark bits. It feels quite unbalanced that way.
Yeah.
And then they go very, very dark in The Black Cauldron in the next film. So I think it's interesting looking at it from that kind of perspective.
I think the other thing that it sort of took me a while to realize is that the only bits of real humor, quote unquote humor, that you were getting were the two birds trying to go after the caterpillar.
Oh my God, they were so funny.
But it's that sort of, you know, you're used to there being like, you know, a joke here and there. And it's like, if you took the two birds out, it's very dark.
It's very dark and it's not funny at all. And even the birds, like, as funny as they are with the caterpillar. And it's obviously Paul Winchell that does the voice of Tigger plays one of the birds. Yeah. But I feel like that was very like filler material, as fun as it was. And like, the film's very short as it is. It's only, what, 80 something minutes? It's very short. But like, I'm glad those two were in it, because they were very, very funny. But like you said, if you took them out, it's very bleak. Yeah,
because there was, I think, was it two storks were meant to be in the film and had like a song, and they were like, no, and
that makes
them out,
no sense.
You know, obviously supposed to be the other like comedic relief in it, and they were like, no, we're fine without it.
I don't know. I mean, I've watched this. I know I've seen this before. I have no real inclination to go back and rewatch it. And there's little things, like you've mentioned, like kind of some of the side characters. There's a lot of familiar voices here. We have the voice, is it... it's the voice of the guy that does the voice of the sheriff.
Pat Buttram. Yokel kind of voice.
Yeah. You've got, there's a lot of familiar voices there, and then you've got kind of Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell, yeah. Who at this point was, you know, this is kind of the joy of John Carpenter. Kurt Russell at this stage was Mr. Disney. I know it was more the live action stuff, and I think the live action stuff is kind of, because I know we haven't really dealt with this, but I think in around this time we would have probably had the Black Hole. I think the Black Hole, which is another one of those Disney films, which, I mean, I had adore the Black Hole. I absolutely adore that film, and it's if you've never seen it, listeners, just seek it out. I know when we were doing the TV show under lockdown, I think one of the first kind of few movies I watched on Disney Plus when it came back on was the Black Hole, and I was delighted that it still stood the test of time. But it is dark. It goes to some dark and terrifying places, and as Victoria alluded to, this kind of feels like Disney trying to do different things post the passing of Walt Disney, maybe kind of looking at kind of where the ship had to be steered to keep itself relevant. And you also have at this time the emergence of new animation studios, because the 80s you would have started, I mean, Disney very much were kind of the domineering studio within animation, but you start to see that shifting. In the 80s, you start to see the emergence. I know kind of we bring that even to more recent examples when we've seen the emergence of Pixar and things like that with John Lasseter. And then, of course, Disney just said, well, we'll just buy that back. We'll just buy Pixar. But, you know, you look at the kind of the marketplace now, the amount of studios that can deliver animated material. So that was the area where Disney were king or queen, whichever gender you want to put down, or if you want to put non-gender, just the kind of they were the domineering force in that realm. But it's interesting, I think around this time they started to lose, if I'm right, maybe Victoria you might know this, Sarah you might know this as well, I think they started to lose animators to other studios around this time. And you can, like, I'm thinking in the 80s you must have, and maybe it was latter 80s early 90s, like you start to have stuff like All Dogs Go to Heaven. We have, and what can I say? I'm going to throw a reference, and I think it was later, but, you know, like Fievel Goes West.
Knew you were going to mention that.
An American Tale. Fievel! Sorry, just listeners, listen back to previous pods. But you start to see that other studios are doing animated features as well. It's not just the realm for Disney. And other studios did animation alongside Disney as well, you know, before that. But it was very much kind of, you think of those films, you think of Disney. So it's an interesting time, as you say. And I know you've mentioned this, Victoria, but can I push you a little bit more for anyone? I think we've maybe touched on this, but the nine old men of Disney, do you want to elaborate a little bit more about that? So kind of, because this is, as you say, a very important aspect. This is a very important film because this is kind of, as you've mentioned, the passing of the guard for that. So just when we talk about the nine old men of Disney, who are we talking about?
Okay, so off the top of my head, because I can never remember all nine of them, but I know there was Mark Davies, Frank Thomas, and Ollie Johnson. So they were with like Walt from the beginning, and they very much wanted to keep his original vision in mind, which is why I think they clashed so much with the new animators, because they were kind of like, right, we have this Disney aesthetic, we have these kind of storylines, but it's all been done. What can we do different? And I think they were very reluctant to kind of go in a new direction because they were like, well, this works. Why would we change it? Which in a sense I get, but you're not going to grow as a studio if you don't branch out. And unfortunately, the next film that we will talk about, two of the directors of Fox and the Hound directed The Black Cauldron, and it bombed. And I think it was the first Disney film that was PG. So I think the nine old men were like, told you. Yeah.
Was this, because I think we touched on this, and I think I may know the answer already. I think it might be Robin Hood, possibly The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. Was this a project that was one of the first that really had nothing to do with Walt Disney. Was Walt at any point in this kind of involved?
I don't think he was involved at all, because I don't think they got the right... I actually think the book was written after he died. So he wouldn't have even been familiar with the source material. I think the book came out in 67 and Disney bought the rights in 77. I'm near sure Walt Disney was at least familiar with The Rescuers, even if it didn't get to the point where he knew the studio would eventually adapt it. But as far as I'm aware, like, Walt had absolutely nothing to do with this.
Do you feel like, looking at it, that this is... this is all conjecture, and I mean, this is all conjecture in all of us. Do you get a sense that this is kind of that kind of caught in the flux, but trying to say, well, this is the type of film that Walt would have wanted to make with The Fox and the Hound?
It's an awkward one, because there are, like, very classical elements of the old Disney. Like I said, it's very similar to Bambi. And yeah, it does have that very, very sad moment where the widow has to leave Todd in the forest, and I gurned like a baby. Which is, again, very classic Disney. Harken back to the likes of Bambi. And even at the end, I always cry at the end of Pinocchio when Geppetto thinks Pinocchio's dead and he's crying on the bed. Like, there's some very bittersweet moments in it. But I don't know. I feel like they were trying to stick to a formula, and then they were clashing with the new animators. And because of that, it does feel very one half... part two, and then it feels like, plot wise there's not really a plot. Like, there's an overarching theme, like the theme is friendship and how that grows, but there's not really a massive plot per se. Yeah, which is not very Disney. Like, no, normally they do have a very, like, act one incident crisis, like, very formulaic kind of thing, but this doesn't really have that.
Now, you mentioned, Victoria, you cried at that sequence with the widow, you know, saying, this is for the greater good, as they say in Hot Fuzz, this is for the greater good, Todd, you have to be kept safe. But I found the widow character in this, I found her just too weird, too odd. I mean, she's kind of classic, like, she's keeping a fox as a pet, and she's locking it in her house and stuff, and I don't know, I find her... Look, I don't think this is as much of a niggle as I've had in previous films we've talked about in this retrospective. Like why
would the mouse need money?
Why would the mouse need money? Why is a horse singing? Why is the horse singing that he wants to be a cat? These are not that, but I don't know. I've just found her as a kind of... I know she's meant to be a very caring character, but then she's quite trigger-happy when she gets her hands on the gun at a certain sequence in this, and she seems to have one cow. I don't know how she's making her money, because she's got one cow, but she's an awful lot of milk, so God help poor Abigail. She just must be running on empty, that poor cow. I don't know. I just find her... She was just too much of a hippie for me. She's keeping a fox as a pet, and I don't know.
Go ahead.
Go on ahead, sir.
No, I was going to say, I think that's, especially when you look at the sort of the hunt, what do you call them, the hunter as well?
Amos.
That they're both very exaggerated in, like, they're kind of weird, almost to make you focus on the animals more and be like, oh, well, they seem like the sane ones in all of this.
Yeah, I get that.
Okay, I just still think she's too much of a hippie for me.
Yeah.
See, she reminds me of my granny, so I think I might be a bit biased. Especially, like, when she gets out of her car and just stands there with her hands on her hips, and I was like, that's just my granny.
Everybody's granny was a bit like that. I just don't remember my granny kind of, you know, when she got her hands on a gun, just being quite as trigger happy as that, but then maybe I didn't know my granny as well as I should. I don't know. Is there anything else either of you want to really touch on? I don't know if it's a small niggle for me, and I don't know whether I'm just kind of reading too much into it, but Pearl Bailey's character, the fact that she's Big Mama, I don't know, is that leaning too much into kind of racial stereotypes?
It felt so racist to me. like, I don't think there was any ill intent, but like at the same time, it's intent versus impact kind of thing. But I'm kind of like, because Pearl Bailey, the lady that voices her, she was quite big in her own right. So I'm kind of like, if she thought it was racist, I don't think she would have done it.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe she was just embracing that kind of black culture side of her, but I don't know.
It's not Songs of the South, right? It's not that level of bad, right? It's not level in there. But, and maybe it's just the case, the fact that, you know, Victoria and I, we were doing the Candyman pod and maybe just kind of thinking about stuff like that. It just feels very much like a character that kind of just is too much leaning into racial stereotypes. But then I'm very aware of Pearl Bailey as a performer in her own right. So if she didn't feel that way, then, you know, I'm maybe imposing my own thoughts in 2021's eyes on that. I don't know, but it was just something I felt very much as they kind of going, really, did you have to call this character Big Mama?
Yeah, it wasn't subtle.
I don't know. And I don't know. That's kind of thing. That was only one other thing for me. I don't know. As I said earlier, I don't know if I'll be rushing to rewatch this. And I know I said this, and I just want to see what you both think, because when I was doing a bit of research, you know, shock horror, believe it or not, listeners, this is me with research. Imagine if I hadn't researched this. But apparently this is considered one of the most depressing Disney movies of all time. I don't think that's a stick I would beat this film with. I do think it's a film that is quite somber, and in terms of how it reveals itself by the end or how it resolves itself, it doesn't wrap everything up in a neat bow. It doesn't say everything will all be all right in the end. You know, it kind of implies things will get better. There will be bad days, there will be good days, but this is all part of the growing up process. And I don't know. I wouldn't say this is an overtly depressing film. It is quite somber at times. You've both had mentioned there's a sequence with Chief. There's a sequence with the bear, which is just generally terrifying and nightmare-inducing. But would either of you say it's the I can't think of a... Well, but there's sequences in other Disney films I can think of being very depressing. And, you know, more recent examples, maybe Disney Pixar, I can think of being sequences that have really utterly depressed me. But where do you both come down? I'll start with you, Sarah. Where do you come down in that comment? Do you think that this is one of Disney's most depressing films?
I don't think so. I think sort of the same thing that you had said. It was just sort of there. Like, it was just a very, you know, an easy ride, maybe up until the bear part, but it didn't make me come out, you know, come away from it going, oh, that was the worst thing I've seen, I feel so sad. It's not that. It's just sort of a mellow kind of film, not that inspiring, not that depressing. But no, I don't think calling it like Disney's most depressing movie is a correct title for it at all.
Yeah, what about you, Victoria?
Yeah, I completely agree with Sarah. Like I said at the start of the podcast, I thought I hadn't seen this the whole way through. And the more I'm watching it, I'm going, right, everyone's told me this is really sad. When's the sad part? Yeah. And then admittedly, I did gurn like a baby when she has to leave Todd. But I think part of it is because the old lady reminds me of my granny. And I was also cuddling my greyhound. He kind of looks like a fox. So maybe I was like projecting me and my dog's relationship onto Todd and this old lady. But even the end, like, yes, the ending's a bit bittersweet, but I was watching it like, this is not as sad as people have made it out to be.
Yeah.
So I don't know why people are so like, when you list like depressing Disney films, why this always comes up.
Yeah. And it's not even like,
it's not, because in my head, I thought Todd had been abandoned when he was younger. So when he got left as an adult, I was like, I mean, he can kind of fend for himself more than he would have been able to as a young, like, fox pup. So even then, I wasn't as sad. So I don't know where this reputation comes from.
I don't know. And then the other thing I want to ask you both, because, again, when I was looking at this, and I don't know kind of what you're ranking Victoria is for this era for Disney. And I mean, I don't know if you've thought about that, Sarah, before this pod, about ranking the dark era. This comes really high within, kind of, for a lot of people, this is kind of the one of the better Disney films within Disney's dark era. And I really disagree. I think it's because we've just come off the previous pod, which I know admittedly was recorded quite some time ago, but I adore The Rescuers, but maybe that's because those rose-tinted glasses of a film that hit me right at the right time when I was younger, and I've loved it, and that love for it has carried through to now, to, as I say, next year I'm nearly 40. Next year I will be 40, not nearly 40, next year I am 40. And I still love that film. And I know, Victoria, I think you talked before about your love for Robin Hood, or it might have been Maria talked about you.
She loves Robin Hood.
Their love for Robin Hood. But I don't know if I would put... I know we've got a few more films to still... How many films have we still to talk about? I know we've got...
We've got The Black Cauldron, The Great Mouse Detective, Oliver and Company. I think that might be it. Unless I'm missing one.
So we've three more to talk about. I don't know if I would put this as highly as other people have, but other people clearly rate this as one of the better Disney films within this particular era. Victoria, Sarah, where are you winning?
I don't know. I just it's not bad, but it's not great. Like, I'm not particularly attached to it. Like both of you, like, I'm not in a hurry to rewatch it. Granted, I haven't seen The Great Mouse Detective yet, and Jim has opinions on that one. But if I had to like start ranking them from lowest to highest, I think The Black Cauldron, I'm sorry, would be the lowest, and then Fox and the Hound right above that. Just compared to the other films, like, I love Winnie the Pooh, I love Robin Hood. The Rescuers, I'd actually never seen before the podcast, and it's now in my top 10. So I think that actually gives a lot of credit to Jim. Like, it shows that the film isn't necessarily like good through rose tinted glasses. Like, I was coming to it fresh, having never seen it before, and I love it. Whereas this, I'm just kind of like, it's okay.
Yeah, it was just sort of forgettable. It's one of those movies that you go, oh yeah, that exists. I'm not rushing back to see it, but it wasn't the worst. But also, I wouldn't be, you know, recommend on someone's next watch through.
Yeah, even like in the list of Disney films in general, like, this is not one that I would think to recommend. And again, it's not because it's bad, it's just because it's not particularly memorable.
Yeah, it's one that I go, oh, I remember that, the name of it. I don't really recommend it to anyone, but...
No, you're both kind of talking about a film that's forgettable. Kind of forgot that it existed. Is this the point where I can bring in, and feel free if you haven't seen it, just admit it, but have any of you seen The Fox and the Hound 2?
I think I saw it on the Disney Channel like a long, long time ago, and I remember there was like a bunch of singing puppies, but I can't remember anything else.
I don't know if I saw it. But in my head, because I had sort of forgotten that Fox and the Hound was from the 80s, that in my head I was like, was that not sort of 2000s? Maybe I was thinking of the sequel, but I don't remember it.
I rewatched it for the pod. I found it inoffensive, but completely forgettable. Like, the basic plot is there's a fair in town, and Todd and Copper go to the fair, and there's singing dogs. You're correct, Victoria. There's a group of singing dogs. One of those singing dogs just happens to be voiced by Patrick Swayze, Patrick the Dreamboat Swayze. And that's as much. I watched this morning. That is as much as I can remember. It's inoffensive fluff. We talk about gateway drugs to Disney. There is a film, I can guarantee you, listeners, there is no scary bear, there is no death, there is no deaths, it's literally just Todd and Copper go to the fair. That's all you need to know. from this film, and it's fine. It reminds me a lot, and I know we didn't do this as part of the Disney retrospective, Victoria, but a bit of when we touched on Mulan, when we did a pod about Mulan, and we talked about Mulan 2. It exists, it's there, it's utterly inoffensive, but it's utterly forgettable. It's, if you want to watch it, but there's other things like The Black Hole you could watch that are much more fun than this. I don't know. I wouldn't recommend either of you seek it out.
No.
I wouldn't really recommend. I put it this way. I mean, if you have younger viewers who might find The Fox and the Hound, you know, particularly the latter stages, utterly terrifying, then you're not going to have this problem with The Fox and the Hound 2, but it's just very, very, very safe. Very kind of like, what will we do? Let's have... It felt a bit like, you know, like the Lady and the Tramp sequels.
But they kind of... The, Scamp's Big Adventure.
Yeah. It's kind of like loss. It's kind of on a par with those. So it's not terrible, it's just
there were a lot of, like, Disney went through this phase where they did, like, cuz there's Bambi 2, there's Scamp's Big Adventure, there's 102 Dalmatians. So they kind of did, like, it was either the children of the main characters or it was the characters but as kids. But I'm kind of curious, like, what was the thinking behind that? Because a lot of them were, like, straight to video, straight to DVD. Like, they weren't doing it as a cinematic release. So I'm curious, was it just, like, was it practice for, like, younger animators or something? I don't know
I would say, Victoria, it's kind of, you mentioned this earlier on about the Disney Channel. I would say it's just literally trying to create content.
Could be.
You think now of what Disney Plus is like, and how they crave content, and how much they are seeking as much content as possible to maintain viewers' interest. So, I mean, I would say it's just on a par with that. You know, we have, you know, the Disney Channel. We need people to subscribe. It's like, do you remember that really depressing film from the 80s? Well, let's see what Todd and Copper are up to now. And but it's a weird sequel. It's kind of like an American Psycho 2 kind of sequel, because it's kind of like the weird way, like, there's the sequel to American Psycho 2, which is nothing to do really with the first film. It kind of, like, it's them back to being when they were kids again. So it kind of, like, ignores all the stuff, the later stuff. There's no kind of bear-related kind of risk at any point, but it's just them as they're much younger. And as I say, they go to the fair. It's utterly inoffensive. It's just utterly forgettable. I watched this morning. It was on while I was having breakfast, while I was having my Cheerios. And it was there. I watched it. I was watching it in the background. And I was watching it. It was on the background. I was making notes for this pod. It's fine. As I say, I'm repeating myself, so I will move on. If you have younger viewers, it's not a bad way to keep them entertained, but there are much better Disney films to recommend. But this is then the problematic bit, Victoria, when we talk about better films to recommend, is the point now where you sell us the Disney film that we will be talking about next month as part of our Disney retrospective.
I am sorry for any viewers that like this film. I watched The Black Cauldron for the first time during lockdown last year in preparation, knowing that we were going to be doing this. And I fucking hated it. And I don't know why, because it has everything that I would have loved. It's really, really dark. It taps into folklore. And I was just watching it going, this is awful. So I don't know if I'm selling this upcoming episode to you at all, so we'll just have to see how that episode goes.
It has been a long time, a long, long time since I watched it. I think a little bit like The Fox and the Hound, I have forgotten 99.9% of it, and probably as soon as I start to rewatch it, I will remember that I either loved it or hated it. Sarah, I know we may have you back, or we don't know. We haven't got our guests lined up, but where are you going to weigh in on The Black Cauldron?
Again, I don't remember a lot about it, so it might need to be a Halloween rewatch. But yeah, it's going back and watching sort of older Disney things I wouldn't normally think about throwing on is, it's always fun to see how much you actually remember from them.
Okay, well, hopefully if doing this podcast has in any way encouraged you to go back and rewatch The Black Cauldron, hopefully you enjoy that experience. I hope you do, because Victoria has really built it up to be a really positive viewing experience.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
you'll not regret it at all.
You could be maybe going to see the Heathers musical at the Grand Opera House, but instead just watch The Black Cauldron. And then maybe even go back and look back at some of the Disney films we've already talked about.
I'll watch Fox and the Hound too.
Okay, well, if at least we've sold you to watch that, that's a positive for this. So, look, I think we're going to bring this pod to a close. So all that's really left for me to do now is to thank you, Sarah, for taking part.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Victoria, once again.
Thank you, Jim, as always.
And thank you, dear listeners, for sticking with us. Hopefully you've enjoyed this pod. And we'll be back next week with another recording. But for now, until then, goodbye.
This has been We Need to Talk About Movies. Thanks for listening. For more information, visit banterflix.com. See you next time.